While the state legislature's regular session will wrap up the next couple months, Governor Scott Walker has told lawmakers to stick around for a bit. The governor has called for a special session of the state legislature to address a package of bills aimed at what the governor is calling welfare reform. But some are calling the timing of the call for a special session suspect, as it came 2 days after Republicans suffered a stinging loss in the 10th State Senate District of Western Wisconsin. This hour, we'll talk about the special session, the bills included therein, and more with two state lawmakers from northwestern Wisconsin. This is The West Side. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning on Ideas 88.3 WHWC Menominee Eau Claire and 88.7 WRFW River Falls. Joining me in the studio, I am pleased to welcome Romaine Quinn. He is a Republican state representative for the 75th Assembly District. He lives in Barron. Romaine Quinn, welcome back.
Good to be here.
And also joining us by phone is Janet Bewley. She is a Democratic state senator representing the 25th State Senate District. She lives in Mason. Janet Bewley, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call if you've got questions. Again, we're talking about the governor's call for a special session addressing welfare reform, but certainly we can talk about any other legislation or any other issues that you see fit. Let us know, 1-800-228-5615. So I wanted to talk about the governor's, we can jump right into it, the governor's Wisconsin Works for Everyone welfare reform package. This is something that the governor has been bills have been coming forward through this program for a while. But Romaine Quinn, I wanted to ask you specifically why the need for a special session. Is it politics, as some have suggested, or is it something that the Republicans caucus has been waiting to jump on?
And I think we've heard from some that argue that this came out during a political time, but I know for a fact that the Speaker, Senator Kapinga, even during his time in the Assembly, has been working on issues like this. And if you go back and talk to either of those offices, this has been many months coming. And I think finally, you know, it's still coming to the head with the economic environment we are in. We are at a 3% unemployment. That news came out just recently. We have more people working than ever before. We have tens of thousands of jobs open all across the state, many even in both Janet and I's district. And the point is how do we make sure that everyone that possibly can work is working? And so, again, trying to find that balance between helping those that absolutely need it and reducing those barriers to get people into the workforce, because a lot of us believe that a job and lifting oneself out of poverty is the best welfare program.
So, and I was kind of wondering about that, the employment being low, that is the time to deal with welfare reform. Is that because perhaps state benefits are keeping people from trying to find jobs? Is that the idea?
When I used to be a salesman for Viking Coca-Cola, I traveled to a lot of different businesses, you know, bars, restaurants, Dollar Generals, you know. Some of these places obviously didn't pay very well, but what I hear all the time from managers was that, you know, gosh, they would certain people would only want to work so many hours a week because, one, they wouldn't want to either lose benefits, or, two, they could get by with what they were on. Mm. Granted, not a gold standard of living, but they made it work, and it was, you know, how can I get people to want to work more? And that's why we're doing whatever we can, not only in our programs, to make sure they actually work, but to make sure they don't impede people from getting a job. So if you don't like this last budget, we just reformed our child care subsidy. So we tiered that. So as you make more money, it slowly backs off. So there's not that financial cliff. And that's what we need to do more and more is try not to trap people in poverty and try not to pull the rug out from under them as they're slowly starting to climb out of the situation. So we got to, like I said, review our programs, which I think this is one more step, and making sure that we're actually helping people get out of those situations, not just perpetuate the lifestyle that they're in.
Senator Bewley, some of your Democratic colleagues, including Jennifer Schilling, have said that this is a political stunt, that this is in response to the 10th Senate District, where Democrat Patty Shockner won convincingly in a district that had been held by Republicans for 17 years. Do you agree with that?
Well, I think that the Republicans are looking at the trends, they're looking at the governor's approval rating, and they're realizing that they are far late in addressing the things that the people of Wisconsin, particularly, I can speak for northern Wisconsin, have been asking for. And to go at it now and to claim a special session as necessary is a little bit disingenuous. This could have been, if this really was a priority, bills can be written and we can get things to the floor very quickly. We saw that happen with Foxconn. Nobody had to wait around for that. And so I think that it's very clear that the timing is a big part of it. But let me point out that this this concept of people not wanting to work and then finding a way to punish them if they don't, it just does not describe the way of life of the people that I represent. A single mom with three kids cannot make a living at Dollar General, period. And to expect people to find a quality of life for their children when they're underpaid, they need the benefits. They need the kinds of helping hands that can lift them up and make sure that their children have food and can get to school and make their doctor appointments. And I think that the expectation that people should rally to jobs that diminish their quality of life, I think is rather cruel. People want to work. They want dignity. But if the job itself is a burden to be able to protect your own family because you're making $7.25 is just not feasible.
Senator Buley, if I could follow up very quickly. Do you think that there are situations where people that are getting these state benefits might not want to work more because they could lose the benefits?
Well, I think that they add everything up. They add up where they are, what jobs are available, and they know that they lose money if they have to work for $7.25 an hour. If they could make more money, if they could make just a decent living, of course they would do it. But they're not choosing to accept the help of the state because they're lazy. They're doing it because they don't get enough money coming into their households to survive.
Representative Quinn, people that are in this situation where, you know, a Dollar General's job might be open, but yet that wouldn't pay the bills, how do these bills address that situation?
And they do, and it's not just about kicking people off or penalizing them, like the senator mentioned. You know, we look at the FSET program, the Food Share and Employment Training Program. People that come out of that program, on average, make $12.31 an hour. That's not $7.25 an hour. And granted, that might be, not be a lot to some people, but for someone that previously was not working, you know, that is a big deal. And so we're getting them skills. We're getting them the training. And by going to 30 hours instead of 20 hours a week to maintain that eligibility, we're helping you build skills, build your resume. If I'm an employer, do I want to hire someone that's had a job off and on or has only worked part-time? Do I know you're going to show up? Do I know you have the capability of coming in more than 20 hours a week? You know, I need, frankly, people to pull overtime, not just work 20. So that it's like I said, it's not about penalizing people. The other bill that spreads out the earned income tax credit, you know, it's making people become good stewards of their dollars and good consumers, because instead of giving them a $3,000 check at the end of the year that they may spend on things they need, maybe things they don't, why don't we give it to them monthly? You know, help them build it into their budgets, help them make good decisions, help them lift themselves out year round. So, I mean, as a legislator, I had to adjust. We get paid once a month. That was an adjustment for me going from jobs that paid weekly or biweekly. Well, how do you expect someone who may not have a ton of life skills to then handle a large check from the state of Wisconsin and expect them to budget that over the year? So a lot of these bills really do help people, and that's why I want to implore people that when they look at this special session, these package of bills, they're not all mean. They're not all about kicking people off. And frankly, it's about continuing to help people be eligible and continuing to improve their lives to get them off of them someday once they are successful. We just want people to be successful.
I'd like to hear from our audience. If you've got a question or comment about or for either one of the lawmakers or about the special session or some of the package bills within the Wisconsin Works for Everyone package that the lawmakers are going to be considering here. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call, and 1-800-228-5615. Representative Quinn, if I could follow up the timing. Again, people are looking at this because there was a big upset in the 10th Senate District. People like me in the media are trying to figure out what this could mean, what this might have, you know, analyzing it to death. So with these bills, if this is something that Republicans have been talking about and working on, why not just include them in the regular session? And if it is a special session, will it run concurrently anyway with the regular session?
It's my understanding that that is the plan. So here's what happens in the Assembly at the end of the year. We all have good ideas. We have a lot of bills, and we try to get them through and pass as many as we can because we know the Senate, historically, just does not meet as often as us. So I always say we're the harder working body. So because what happens is even if we get them through the Senate committees, a lot of times they don't meet enough days to get all the bills through. So with this being a priority, truly making it a priority, by the governor calling a special session, it's, hey, lawmakers, no, you're not going home. This is an issue we have to deal with. Again, we just came out with new numbers, record unemployment. Businesses across the state are looking for help. You know, and we're limited on the pools of people that aren't working because more people are working than ever before. So whether it's through Project Search, you know, and the senator and I toured Rice Lake Wayne and saw the graduation and all the good things that does for people with disabilities. Again, this is about finding those pools of people that currently aren't maybe – you know, living up to their potential that they do have and assisting them and getting them there. That's what this is about. So, and I'm not naive to that election. You know, I was knocking on doors for Adam Jarko and Senator Buley was, you know, out stumping for Patty. So we're not naive of that going on, but some of these bills we tried to pass last session. You look at the food share, photo ID on the card, things like that. So again, these have been in the works for a while, and I think it's was just saying by the governor, hopefully you guys do not go home before addressing these issues because our employers and families, frankly, can't wait a whole another year for us to address some of these things.
1-800-228-5615. We've got some calls coming in, but we've got two open phone lines. Of this package of bills, and I want to work through it a little bit, but there's a lot of really technical stuff in this. Janet Buley, do you see any of these bills being something that could get bipartisan support?
I think it's very important to point out to the listeners, and they know this, that the true blueprint of values is the budget. We all work very hard to put into the budget twice every 2 years those things that we think are the most important. And they just finished a budget, took a long time, got postponed. They had plenty of time. I mean, it was last June, July. That's just a couple months ago. They could have put it in that. I mean, you don't suddenly scramble just before an election to suddenly say that this is important to you. I must take issue with something that the representative said about people living up to their potential and making people learn how to budget. I find that insulting. The people that I represent work so hard and are looking for work. I don't know where these $12.50 an hour jobs are that he's talking about. I know that there are people who are in single-parent households that they couldn't possibly go for training somewhere. They're lucky their car makes it to work. And we need the kind of full culture that is going to say your roads are going to be good. Your internet is going to be on. You are going to be able to have daycare. We can't even find daycare, let alone expect that you're going to have the ability to get your kids there. I find that implication of his to be frankly very troubling.
Romaine Quinn, would you like to follow up.
Yeah, absolutely. And that wasn't meant to be insulting, and frankly, it wasn't. There are a lot of people that do struggle with certain life skills. You know, there's a lot of time, there's a reason when people don't work. There's barriers to work, and we have mental health issues. We have to deal with all sorts of things. But there are real people that haven't grown up with parents that taught them real life skills, soft skills, interview skills, you know, basic budgeting. You know, I see my own friends, young people that struggle budgeting. So yes, there are good bills in this that do help with that. It's not saying, you know, they're bad people because of this. They just never had that opportunity. So yes, I believe that everyone has a lot of potential, and there are those that are stuck in poverty cycles that have a lot of potential and could do better, and we want to help them do better. So to imply that that's insulting, it's the reality. Talk to any county worker who administers some of these programs. When they see people walk in, it's, you know, how do we help them get those skills they need? And that's a lot of times what our FSET program does. They do teach those skills. So if we can get them to the job centers and to get some of those training and go over soft skills and help them with interviews and teach them those things, and think that's a positive thing for family. If you look at poverty, and when it comes down to it, it's not just the parents. We talk about children. If you look at children right now, 2/3 of poor children live in a family with no full-time year-round worker, and 31% live in a family with no working adults at all. So who's going to benefit the most out of this? By requiring people start working 30 hours instead of 20 and going into these programs, you're going to be helping the children in these families too. And again, it builds better families, it builds better role models, helps break that cycle of dependence. And again, it's about helping people in those situations, not harming them.
1-800-228-5615 is the number to call if you've got a question or a comment. We're talking about the special session called by Governor Scott Walker relating to welfare reform. Sharon in Chippewa Falls, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Well, I was listening to you talk about a lot of people on welfare. I think a lot of them do. I've seen so many that have just loved living off me, who has worked one job, two job, single parent, and I've never taken a dime. And they sit around, smoke their cigarettes, and complain that now they might have to do something for a living. I mean, I believe we should pay for their child care, absolutely. But do I want to pay for their gas, for their car, their tattoos on their body, for their cigarettes, and wine because they don't have enough money?
Very good. Thank you so much for the comment. Senator Bewley, would you like to respond to that? There are people who...
I agree completely with what she had to say about pay for their child care. I think that that's the kind of thing that would really make a difference in the lives of a lot of people. And right now, if anybody is using some sort of assistance to buy wine or cigarettes, I would agree that is not... Like, you cannot use SNAP for that, and that would be fraud. And I would agree with her that that's not the right use of the money.
And what about that, though? You know, the inspector general within the, I think it's Department of Health Services or Children and Families, there have been examples of fraud that were found, whether it's contractors or individuals, it's hard to say. But do you think that it happens? Do you think that people use these benefits to avoid having to work?
Personally, I do not. I think that there are always people that are going to try to commit crimes or abuse programs, whether it be a kind of welfare program or in paying your taxes. People do it. They try to avoid some of their responsibilities. I do not believe that's the majority of people.
And Romaine Quinn, Representative Quinn, what did you think about Sharon's comments?
Right, and I don't fall into the category, and I think no one thinks that every single person that's on assistance is trying to rig the system or is trying to milk it the best they can to not have to work. But at the same time, I don't think that every person that does receive something may not always be trying absolutely everything they can to get off of it either. So I don't think we live in a perfect world one or another, but there are those in the middle. Like I said, that maybe some of these could be an incentive or that kick in the butt to say, maybe, you know, I should go get that training. Because, again, if you can't find a job, you don't get removed from these programs. All we're asking is you at least look or at least, you know, can pass a drug test or at least enroll in some sort of training or education. And to the point the senator made about you know, where are these jobs? 3M in Cumberland was in my office and the senator's office just last week, and I asked them, how many openings do you have and what do you pay? They said, Romain, if you just basically have a pulse, can come in. We start you at $16.31 an hour with no skill. Just have a high school diploma and be able to show up at work on time. So, again, transportation's an issue. You know, we need to address those issues as well. But to say that all jobs, you know, pay $7.25 an hour and that's the case, that's just simply not accurate of today's market, especially in our districts.
1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. We've got two callers on the line, one line open. We will get to them in just a second. We're joined by Romain Quinn. He's a Republican state representative for the 75th State Assembly District. He lives in Barron. Janet Bewley is also with us. She is a Democratic state senator, joining us by phone from Mason. She represents the 25th State Senate District. 1-800-228-5615. The West Side. We'll be right back.
Support for WPR comes from Wasco Windows, specializing in the manufacturing, sales, and installation of high-performance replacement windows in southeast Wisconsin and the Fox Valley. More information is online at wascowindows.com. Support also comes from DeNovo Med Spa in Eau Claire, offering aesthetic treatments and preventative skin care with personalized service to address every chapter of life. More details are at denovomedspa.com.
You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning. We're talking about Governor Scott Walker's call for a special session in Wisconsin that will bring lawmakers or keep lawmakers in Madison to tackle welfare reform. There's a package of bills. I believe there's 10 of them that the governor has introduced or wants lawmakers to introduce. That's what we're talking about this hour. We've been hearing from, we had a great call just before the break. We've got full phone lines right now. If you can't get through, keep trying. We've got Romain Quinn. He's a Republican state representative for the 75th State Assembly District on the program, as well as Janet Bewley, a Democratic state senator for the 25th State Senate District. Let's go to the phones. Willem in Colfax. Willem, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. Well, I guess what I wanted to say sort of was addressed by the last caller in as an example of how this device is so divisive, this issue is so divisive, and that I think there's something about it coming up in this election year that makes me suspicious. I heard last week on the radio Senator Kapinga say, and this reminded me of Reagan's welfare queen comments, that Senator Kapinga said that he didn't think that state money, hardworking taxpayers' money, should go to people driving Lexuses and living in million-dollar mansions. I would venture to say that he would be hard-pressed to find examples of people living in million-dollar mansions driving Lexuses that also collect food stamps. And so 1 in 4 children in Wisconsin is living in poverty, and a lot of times women can't work, and then, you know, their work would be just to pay for children for their child care. And I thought the whole idea was that women should stay home and raise their children. Now, how are they supposed to do that if they don't make enough money to pay someone else to watch their children? So I think this whole issue is a wedge issue. It's meant to make people who are having a hard time barely getting by angry at other people who are not getting by. It's like, you know, pit the poor against the poorer. I think it's a very divisive and cynical, and, you know, knowing this governor's history of divisiveness and divide-and-conquer strategy, I'm not surprised that they're doing that.
Willem, thanks so much for the call. We appreciate it. 1-800-228-5615. Representative Quinn, do you have any comments as to what Mr. Kapinga said? I don't remember that quote, but...
Sure, I'm not familiar with that, and I wasn't around during the Reagan years. But, again, you know, politics aside, you know, I try to look at every bill and what's in the bill. You know, you either agree with asset limitations or not, regardless if it's the governor or Senator Kapinga calling for it. I mean, do you believe that someone that has a $240,000 home and has $20,000 of equity in their vehicle deserve to be on state assistance? You know, so I try to look at what is in each bill. What does the bill actually do? You know, taking the earned income tax credit, don't give them lump sum, spread it out over the year to help them budget better. I mean, what, regardless of who's introducing the bill and what our politics are, does it make sense or not? And frankly, a lot of these do make sense, and I'm hoping and I'm assuming that there will be bipartisanship on this, regardless of the election timing. Because, too, I mean, people do support these measures, and if we all vote for them, Democrats can put it on their literature, too. So I don't see them as wedge issues. I see them as common sense issues, and for those of us that want to vote, no, that's fine, but go back in November, and I'm glad we're doing them now because people deserve to know before the election where the representatives stand on some of these issues.
One of the bills that this kind of segues into it would be about asset testing, and it sets a limit on assets related to a person's residence that cannot exceed 200% of the statewide median home value. Also, it sets a $20,000 limit on the total equity of non-work-related vehicles. I don't really understand what that means. Senator Buley, are you familiar with this portion of the package?
And, no, these bills came out very recently. I spent a lot of time going over the bills and trying to make sure I understand them completely. I try to think that I'm kind of on top of things, and to be honest with you, it is a little. It's going to take some studying to find out exactly who wins and who loses in this.
Representative Quinn, this sounds like it kind of sounds like means testing to me. Are you familiar with what the asset testing is all about?
Yeah, and that's what I just kind of mentioned in the last comment was for new applicants, for depending on the program they're looking to get assistance of, there would be that asset limitation. You know, if you have that much value at your disposal, yeah, it may be equity in a home, you know, locked up in your home or maybe locked up in your vehicle, but are you really that much in poverty where you need the state assistance when we know that the average house value is worth much less than that? So that's the thing. If you go downtown and talk to anyone, whether it's Barron, Rice Lake, Chetek, Cameron, or you know up in Ashland, and ask them, do you think someone who is applying for assistance through the county or for the state should be able to obtain that if they live in a house that's almost $250,000 and have equity in their vehicle? And I don't know about you, but I don't ever have equity in my vehicle because I drive too much and I don't have the nicest vehicles all the time. So if you're in those cases that maybe you're tied up, maybe, you know, we're going to write rules for exemptions. You know, if dad leaves mom and now she gets the house and she has no income, she's stuck with kids. I mean, there'll be grace periods, things like that. But if you have assets and you have money, maybe not liquid yet, should you be asking other people who have less to continue to help you with that lifestyle if you could make some changes? So I think it's just common sense. If you've got wealth, some wealth somewhere, that should be factored in on what kind of assistance you're allowed to have. So, yeah, these bills are fairly new, but a lot of them are fairly simple.
So the idea is if you do have a vehicle, a separate vehicle, whatever, mm-hmm. you could sell it or you could sell your home to pay your way until you get on your feet again.
Right. So maybe I don't have a job that makes a lot or I'm not showing income because, remember, there's a lot of people that do make pretty good money but may not work down at the factory or somewhere where they're logging necessarily all their income, and they may have a really nice house. So technically, due to their income, they may qualify, but they have a lot of assets. And so is that actually a whole indicator of poverty? I look at my own example. There's a bill also that wants to make sure parents follow through on their child support payments if you're going to continue that. I wish they passed this bill when I was younger because my father made a ton of money, had a $400,000 log house, and was never paying my mother a dime for the most part, and she could never get money out of him. So there should be asset limitations. We should make sure people follow through, and again, to make sure the resources that are there. People want to help others, but they want to know there's just some level of accountability, and that's what these bills really do.
I wanted to talk about the work requirements. I mean, we've already heard a little bit in the past about work requirements for childless, able-bodied adults, but one of these bills would expand that to include adults able-bodied with children. First of all, what is the definition of able-bodied? Who does that include? People that might have cognitive disabilities but are functional to a certain extent? I mean, who sets that rule?
I think the statutes define that pretty well, and there's a number of issues. For some programs, if you're older 50, you're exempt. If you have a disability, you're exempt. If you're a pregnant woman, you're exempt. So there's definitely limitations. It's defined in statute, and we can certainly get you that information as well. So again, we're just trying to target those who can gain meaningful employment, those who are physically and mentally capable of doing that.
Senator Buley, your thoughts on requiring, you've already kind of alluded to this, but I just wanted to touch on it again, parents, single parents, being required to work for, I think it's 20 hours a week, or search for a job training for 20 hours a week in order to get SNAP food benefits, for example. Do you think that's a logical choice or not?
Well, they already are. I mean, to first of all, I think you have to realize that a lot of these people are already working. So the percentage of people that this would affect is far lower than people may assume. Most of the people who are seeking benefits are already working, and they cannot find work that either pays more or gives them more hours. I mean, there are only so many bars in northern Wisconsin that you can clean, and I know women and men who go out there and do that, and there's just no other work around. I understand that there might be something available in Cameron, but what about Mercer? The district up here is very vast and very, very different. And what's available in Cameron is certainly not the case for the rest of the district. And I also want to comment on the concept of people having wealth, and that if you have wealth, you should get rid of your assets. Well, having some sort of, oh, no, the word he used was equity. Having equity is the foundation of being able to move forward. If you have to drain your equity, that means you have to go to zero. If you've got, let's say you were able to buy a $15,000 pickup truck, but then somebody in your family becomes ill, so now you've got to go sell it and try to find a good price for it and reduce yourself to another vehicle just because you've hit a bad spot. You own a home, and suddenly someone has computed that you have too much equity in it, so now you've got to move. Well, we've been forcing old people out of their homes because of the fact that they can't afford their taxes. So now we're going to take families and say you have too much equity, you've got to move. I think that having some equity is a part of what allows the family to move forward. Now, granted, if there was the mansion that has been referred to, of course, I mean, no one is saying that you should drive a Rolls Royce and have a mansion. And you know fraud when you see it. But we're looking for it, and we're trying to label people as trying to work the system when all they're trying to do is just live.
Representative Quinn, any thoughts?
Yeah, at no point did I say I don't want people to have, you know, equity or in their home or have value. I mean, I want people to have that. But the point is, you know, as a state legislator, I can't afford to live in a $240-some-thousand house. I can't make that mortgage payment. So all we're saying is, if you're to the point where you think you need food share just to get by, just to feed yourself every month, and you live in a $250,000 house, but you could live comfortably in a $150,000 house like the rest of us, why would you expect those of us to keep paying those benefits when you could make adjustments? Yeah, life happens. Things change. People get sick. I get that. And my family, every family struggles with that. But you make decisions. You don't expect someone else to do it for you. And you make those lifestyle changes to provide for you and your family. So all we're saying, again, is to put in basic asset limitations. These programs are, a lot of them are month to month, again, supposed to be temporary to help lift you out of those situations. So I don't think they penalize people at all. And it's funny that, yes, you know, property taxes and are a big issue for many elderly. Well, don't sit here and talk about property taxes when you vote against every budget that sinks millions of dollars to try and freeze property taxes, whether it's through the school levy, tax credit, or others. So I think that piece is somewhat disingenuous to bring that up when there hasn't been a concerted effort, I would argue, on the left in Madison to try and work with us to continue to freeze property taxes across the state.
Let's take a phone call before we take our final break here on the west side. Phyllis in Clark County, you're on the air. Phyllis, what's on your mind?
I worked in programs that provided training and helped people with disabilities get employment. I worked in programs for 20 years, and I saw many workforce development programs go by the wayside. In most cases, it's because they simply did things like help people fill out applications and learn to be interviewed and develop a resume, but they did not give real training if you're going to do this, then do this right. That means you have to look to the school systems and do real education with this particular population. You need to have the people properly assessed. You need to put some bucks into this thing or it isn't going to work. As I said before, I saw those programs come and go, and they didn't accomplish very much. But when we worked with people who had disabilities, and we did it right, we provided support, we provided transportation, we provided child care, we provided clothing, we could get them employed. If you do it right, you could make it happen. And then you need to do it with dignity. I agree with the previous caller 100%. That would be my comment.
All right, Phyllis, thanks so much for that. That was a fantastic comment. 1-800-228-5615. If you've got a question or comment for State Senator Janet Buley or State Representative Romaine Quinn. Representative Quinn, I'll go to you with that. She's talking about do it right, sink some money into it, prepare to connect this with schools. And so how comprehensive of an approach are we talking about here, and what kind of money might go into this?
Right. No, Phyllis is spot on, and I want to thank her for not only the work that she did through those programs, but for bringing that piece up. So a couple of the bills kind of get at the root of what she probably saw during her time, too, was we don't want some of these work temp agencies just to get paid on the enrollment of people they get through. How many people can, you know, we don't want to just stick people in a room, show them a video, you know, say they're trained, you know, talk about interviews a little bit and then kick them out the door and hopefully did good and you still get paid. No, one of the bills in here specifically ties all the pay to these agencies for performance because we want you to do more, to reach into the details, to really help these people in those situations, not just to get them through to say they went through their training, quote unquote, so they can still get assistance and you can get paid regardless of outcomes. We want good outcomes for these people. That is our goal. So in terms of coordination with schools, we're doing this more and more all the time. So I applaud, you know, the school districts across my district. They are coordinating with employers. They're setting up programs in the schools to meet employers' needs. So some of these kids don't even have to go to college. They can go right into the workforce making a good wage because they got that training in high school. So you're absolutely right. And she mentioned she worked on the disability side of things in these programs. You know, Wisconsin continues to rank in the top 10 states in the country for providing help and employing people with disabilities. And that's something I think we can all be proud of. But she's right. These programs have to be detail-oriented and complex enough to deal with these various situations.
As far as the price tag, I've seen ranges from anywhere from $90 million to a Democrat lawmaker mentioned that this would cost $300 million for the state. Do we have any idea what could be the cost for taxpayers for these reforms?
Well, I don't know where the $300 million number came from. I know there's a number about $90 million, you know, because part of it, too, is, you know, we open a trust fund
right.
On one of the bills to try and help nonprofits really help these people that they deal with on an everyday basis and rewarding these groups for good outcomes for these people. You know, mandating the FSET training across the state, that's going to cost money. So it's funny because it's, well, you're spending too much money on this. Well, what do these bills do? They invest in people. You know, we're spending money on training. We're spending money on getting these people skills they need, you know, to try and have a better life. So it's, you know, a lot of these bills, it is investing in people and it's making those positive improvements for them to try and give them a better life. And I think that's something we should all be able to get behind.
Senator Buley, your thoughts on Phyllis's comments and also about potential costs for investing in this program?
Well, I think that, you know, we need to invest, but I think there are two places that we can start to invest in right away, and that is our schools. I think that most school districts would love to be able to have the ability to provide classes that they right now cannot afford to provide simply because they're frozen or they just aren't getting the revenue that they need to expand. The schools have been getting new mandates to teach certain things, and these mandates come without funding. So I think that if we truly gave our schools what they needed to educate kids, we would see students that were ready to go when it comes time to go into the workforce. They simply can't do it with the budgets that they have. And if we freeze property taxes, well, we make it even. They're frozen, so they're trapped. I think that the same thing with our technical colleges. They are frozen. They do not have the ability to expand quickly in areas that they might want to invest in. They do the very, very best they can. But when I visit with the technical college boards, the thing that they ask for the most is to lift the freeze so that they would have the ability to ask the people in the district exactly what they want their budget to look like rather than to have that imposed from the state. When it comes to what the caller was talking about investing, I think that the programs that we're doing for persons with disabilities are wonderful. And for those areas that have population, I think that they perform beautifully. We still have a problem in the real rural areas where persons with disabilities are literally trapped in their homes because they don't have access to transportation. It is a big, big problem, and it's going to take a lot of work to solve the rural transportation problem.
With that, we need to take our final break here on the West Side. We're speaking with State Senator Janet Buley. She's a Democrat from Mason. Republican Romaine Quinn is a state representative for the 75th District. He lives in Barron, 1-800-228-5615. We've got full phone lines right now, but keep trying. We can we'll work through the calls when we get back.
Wisconsin Public Radio is a service of the Wisconsin Educational Communications Board and the University of Wisconsin Extension, with additional financial support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and from listeners through the Wisconsin Public Radio Association.
Winter is a perfect time to read some good books. The winter reading program Curl Up and Read runs through February 28th at the L.A. Phillips Public Library in Eau Claire. Reading earns chances to win prizes. Register online at ecpubliclibrary.info/events.
I'm Rich Kramer. You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Good Monday morning to you. We're talking about welfare reform. Governor Scott Walker has called for a special session to consider a package of bills to address, to make tweaks to the state's welfare programs, including, but not limited to, increasing the amount of hours a single childless adult must work in order to qualify for benefits. Also requires parents now, some parents, to work 20 hours or in order to maintain benefits or do 20 hours of job training a week. There's a lot more that we haven't talked about here, but we've got a lot of great questions, so we're working through them right now. I wanted to go to Jacob in Ellsworth. Jacob, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Well, I just had a couple quick comments here. I know I haven't heard any of you guys talk about any of this, but yet plenty of people that I work with from my area have talked about this. So for instance, somebody that I know, you know, you have one kid and you're on benefits and you can't afford that kid. Pretty soon this person has five kids. Well, because they keep giving them benefits to keep having kids. You know, I got four kids and I made a decision not to have any more because I got to pay the health insurance has very high deductibles. And so I made the decision not to have any more kids financial reasons because I want to pay for them. I pay for the health insurance, but it just seems like some of these people just keep popping them out because we pay for them.
Got you loud and clear. Thanks so much for that, Jacob. It's a thing that we hear constantly, that there's this idea that people have more kids in order to get more benefits. Do you think this is a myth versus reality? Romaine Quinn, your thoughts? I mean, do you hear this from your constituents?
I mean, I hear some people complaining. Again, I know some of the people that work in the county and in other places that help people on this. And, yes, sometimes, you know, they shake their head when they come in and they see someone, you know, that is having more children that they know financially they can't afford. And obviously there's a number of situations that go in with, you know, family planning and other things like that. So I guess I won't get into too deep on that. But, yes, the more that we can help, whether you're a single dad, single mom, you don't have kids, or maybe you do have kids. I mean, again, just like these bills aim to do, any way we can get you in a better situation, in a better job with skills that make you employable, to lift yourself out so you can take more personal responsibility for your family, I think is a good thing.
Senator Buley, your thoughts?
Well, I think that, you know, I think that sometimes we want to sort of stereotypify people and say that there are these people that go out and have kids because they want to get more money. I think that that's a little bit unfortunate and probably somewhat overstated. A person's decision to have a child is not something that I'm going to dive into and criticize or praise. Once children are born, my belief is that you take care of the child first, and then you evaluate the parent second. You take care of the kid. Once the child is there, then it is important to do everything we can and not limit what that child might be able to achieve because of some bad opinion that we might have of the parent.
I wanted to talk next about drug screening. One of the bills in the package requires residents in public housing to pass a drug test and participate in an employment screening process that would be administered, I think, by housing authorities. So, Romaine Quinn, Representative Quinn, I'll go to you. Does this bill assume that people are, again, milking the state by using public housing, or is it an invasion of privacy?
Well, I think it just comes down, you know, if you talk to the taxpayers and say, if we give you public housing, we subsidize your housing, and if we subsidize, you know, your food share or other programs, again, we want to know that if you're employable and you have skills or could learn skills, that you work, plain and simple. And not only that, that you can pass a drug test. I won't get into the debate of recreational use of marijuana, so on and so forth, but again, people all agree, if I have to pass a drug test to be able to go to work, you should have to be able to pass a drug test to not have to work or to get benefits to live a certain way. Because I know there are a lot of people that, and you can get into the social construct of, you know, needs versus wants. And when you're in poverty in those situations, you know, how do you spend your money? But I think most people agree that, yes, you know, whatever you do in your own home is fine. But again, if you're at a point where you need assistance, to the point where we're subsidizing your housing and everything, we want to know that you are capable, if you're capable, that you are ready to go to work tomorrow if an opportunity opens up. And those opportunities are becoming more and more available all the time.
And if I could follow up, do you need to pass a drug test in order to go to work?
Not in the legislature. We've talked about that because some of the criticism is, why don't you guys? I mean, I'll gladly pee in a cup in Madison to continue doing my job. But we haven't talked about that as of late. But I know that does come up on occasion.
Sure. And then also the argument is that should businesses that get money through WEDC or whatever, you know, I keep seeing that argument as well. Do you think there's any weight to that in terms of fairness that a business owner getting $1 million grant from the state or a loan should have to prove that they are not on drugs?
Yeah, I guess I haven't thought about it that much just because I think every situation is going to be so different. What business is it? How many jobs do they have? How many people do they employ? What investment are they making? What kind of wages are there? And then how the business is set up. Is it a single owner? Is it a sole propriety or not? Or is it a corporation with a board? I mean, it depends on how you want to look at it, but I haven't given that much thought.
Senator Buehler, your thoughts on drug testing for public to qualify for public housing?
Well, I think it's discriminatory, and it's an invasion of privacy. I think that if you are entitled to privacy, you are entitled to that no matter what your economic status is, no matter if you own a company or if you're poor. Suddenly we're saying that in order to function in this society, if you're poor and you have to get some help, you have to have your privacy invaded. But somehow if you are accepting what is sometimes called corporate welfare or grants and favors from the government, somehow you don't have to be tested. I think that's classist, and I think that what's sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander.
Let's take our final call here. And Sue, in Chippewa, you are on the air. We are racing to the top of the hour, so if you could be brief, we'd appreciate it. What's up, Sue?
Well, I do want to say that I agree with Representative Brule on that last comment. If you're going to take $100,000 from our state, then you should, you know, be tested as well as taking, you know, food share. But I do want to also say that child care in northern Wisconsin is scarce, and it's very hard for parents there to do it. I had to quit my job because of not having child care for my children. But luckily my husband had a job. Job centers, they're a great thing. But most of all, if you invested in the schools, the public schools, that is the best way to go. I wonder about Representative Schilling's comment about this special session, that it perhaps the Republicans are worried about what's coming up. The governor could call for the special elections for the two openings in our state, but he has not done that, and they've been open for a while now. So that's about all.
All right. Thank you so much, Sue. We appreciate the call. And Beth in Stone Lake, it looks like we're not going to have time to get to your question, but thank you for calling in. Senator Buley, your thoughts?
Well, I think that I really appreciate the caller saying that we need to invest in our schools. If we invested in the existing institutions and things that we have now that do well, like our schools, we wouldn't have to suddenly scramble and come up with quick fixes to things that are currently on the public's agenda. We need to put these things in our budget. We need to set them as real priorities and not as part of an election campaign.
Romaine Quinn, Representative Quinn.
Yeah, and I think we did make that a priority in the budget. The senator chose to vote against it, but we put over $600 million into schools of spendable dollars, not just to reduce the levy, on top of reducing or freezing property taxes as well. And the senator will have an opportunity, just like I already did, to vote to increase varsity aid for rural districts as well and raise the low revenue ceiling for school districts. And on top of that, you know, making those investments for workers, Wisconsin has more fab labs in our K-12 system than any other school system in the country. So we, I think, you know, it can be argued we are really making those investments to get these people the skills they need to be employable and successful adults, so we can, like, I think the caller was getting at, is we can break that cycle and reach those people early on, so we don't have to deal with problems that may arise as adults.
And with that, we are out of time. I want to thank my guests. Janet Buley is a Democratic state senator representing the 25th State Senate District. She lives in Mason. Janet Buley, thank you so much for being part of the program.
My pleasure.
And Romaine Quinn is a Republican state representative for the 75th State Assembly District. He lives in Barron. Romaine Quinn, thank you very much for participating.
Thank you.
And great calls. Thanks for all of our listeners who dialed in. Next week, we'll have the outdoor guys on. We'll be off this politics subject for about 1 week. We'll see. Have a safe and productive week. We'll chat again next Monday morning.